questions. One is about these insect traps. And I don't know from whom it is, but anyway, it's like, yeah, I also think it's really terrible, to be honest. Did we take a vow to save life? No, not really. Yeah, the first step is that we stop harming. So it's very tricky, you know. If this would be the Dharma Friends Center, I guarantee you there would be no such traps hanging, nowhere. But it's not our center. Somebody else is running it. We're there hosting us. They're quite generous and all this. So they decided to put these things up. And I think we have to, we can go and talk to them, but we have no right to just tear it down. This is the thing. Because it creates, you know, these insect traps, these things for the flies. I know it's horrible. I know it's terrible. And I don't know what to do either. Is the question from you or no? So I feel very sad about this also. So then at least you know when you are in your home, do not put any. Can I bring the microphone up? Yes, I can bring it up. Okay, the question was, is okay now? Okay. We made a vow not to kill, but what about saving life? I see fly traps all around this place and it kills many flies. Is not saving life a vow too? Yeah, but not when it's somebody else's property, I mean, in a way, you know. As I said, if you want to go and talk to the people in the office, by all means do. If they will take them down, I doubt very much. What I also said, if this place would belong to the Dharma Friends, you would see no such traps, nowhere. Yeah, I'm always very unhappy when I see them, but, you know, what can I do? Then we can also say, don't drive a car, because, don't put the air condition on, because that's polluting. It's like you lose a lot of energy and all this. This is part of what is called samsara. Yeah, whatever we do, it's always somehow not so totally right. Yeah, so I'm not happy with these traps. At one point, somebody, one of us, tore them down, and I don't think that was the right thing to do, to be honest, because they do not belong to us. But what you can do is, in your home, be careful. For, you know, other things we can make up for it. Like, for example, the plastic that you have, instead of just throwing it into the normal garbage, bring it down to the plastic garbage. There's quite a few recycling places around here. I know today is hot, but one of them I think is on the way to the dining room, or gather it and then put it somewhere. The paper cup that you're using, use it more than once. Use it until it really cannot be used anymore. This is why we ask you put your name on it. We try to be as considerate as we can with these things, but it very much depends on the individual also, you know. When it comes to food waste also, it's like, first we clean our own house somehow, you know, before we start pointing to others. And then, yeah, there's a lot of injustices that are happening in the world that we get upset, but then there's nothing we can do about this. And then being upset and keeping that upsetness. I mean, I think this is what this forgiveness thing is all about. It's not stopping anybody from doing harm. And when we talk about forgiveness, I like it when people ask these questions and when they see that something is happening here that is not, you know, is not such a great thing. But also we have to admit we're quite happy when the place is not full of flies, isn't it? You know, if I was, where was I? In the mountains in Switzerland, and it was about quite a warm day, a lot of sun, and the cows are outside, and the windows were open. Well, the place, the meditation hall, was full of flies, and we couldn't get them out. So, you see, it's also like on one hand, we like all the comfort and all this, but I will not, you know. So we do as best as we can so that we become a non-harming person, but whatever we do, you know, that it's polluting for Mother Earth. We need to eat, we need to move, we have transport, we travel, we use water, we use electricity, we use clothes, you know, we could go on and on and on. Where do your clothes come from? When you buy your clothes, what do you buy? Do you buy the ones who are more expensive because you think, oh, that's good, because maybe they get a good salary, or you buy the ones that are cheapest? You know, all these kinds of things. It's like we can become much more conscious, and at least when you buy cheap clothes, that you say thank you to those people who are working like for very little salary also. Or when we eat the vegetables, especially now that it's so hot, you know. It's a terrible job to work outside to grow your vegetables that you just gobble down. You know, we come here in the nice air-conditioned place, and oh, it's so hot outside. Oh no, it's so hot outside. But how many of us really work outside? Yeah, and people do, not because it's their choice, because they think, oh, it's so healthy to work outside, you know. It's because they don't find any other jobs. Yeah, so all these kinds of things, one can become very conscious. And then somebody pointed out that a psychopath is not psychotic. Yeah, I do apologize if I hurt somebody's feeling, or, you know, for my confusion, stupidity. It's stupidity, I didn't know. I usually put this in the same thing. I'm really sorry. And then the person goes on saying that there is a stigma on that, and she explains what's the difference between the two. I'm trying to take away the stigma here by putting ourselves in the same position. So I'm not pointing with the finger on people who are psychopaths or psychotic or whatever. We're all delusional to some people. And exactly what the person is explaining, exactly true. Psychosis is a condition that can come from physical sicknesses, high fever, taking intoxicants like drugs, or having schizophrenia. Our psychosis have causes, you know. It's not that one is born with it and that's it. They do have causes. It's our negative emotions and our wrong views of what reality is and whatever. So we're all in the same position with degrees. And if we would understand that, you know, if you know that somebody is psychotic or a psychopath, or, you know, the difference between the two, or you're ignorant like me and you put them in the same category. If you understand it comes from causes, but you understand, you know, this person insults you, you're not hurt. It's not pleasant when they tell you you're such an idiot and you should get lost and this and that. But you're not hurt, you're not carry that around with you for the rest of your life. When you think that somebody's normal and is doing that, then you're hurt. This is the point I was trying to make. Okay, that we're all delusional like that. Actually, we just had a case like this in our house. A Dharma practitioner, young lady, she's been to India, she came back, there's a fly. See, you're not saying, come here and sit on my head. You're going, go and sit on somebody else's head. Yeah, this is how we are. You know, it's another way, spiritual practice is another way just to evaluate where we are without putting ourselves down. Just to see, okay, this is the material I have, what can I do with it? So she came back from India, was a bit like, you know, uprooted a little bit, because she was almost a year in India. And she said she spent the whole night on Facebook. And all of a sudden, this idea came that we're all run by machines, and the machines are going to come and control us. And she ran away. I mean, she left, she was staying with her sister. She ran away with no idea where she was. We didn't know that she had gone just like that. And so the sister gets a phone call 2 days later from France, from Mulhouse. It's just across the border. They found her, broken foot. She had, like, you know, beaten up half of the hospital. Not beaten up, that's exaggeration. Mm-hmm. She had been very violent. She was abusing everybody. She's totally naked because she was in the rain, and then the clothes got soaked and dirty, and so she just took them off and wanted to go and take a shower in a hotel. But it was a hotel where you need a code to go in. So then somebody saw her and called the police, and she was saved because, you know what could have happened to her. And she remembers everything totally clearly. And after 2-3 days taking medicine, finished. She's at home and had her foot operated and everything is okay. But she can exactly recall what happened. And she had hidden her little backpack in the forest. So we went to look for it. She knew exactly where it was. She couldn't come with us because of her broken foot, but we were kind of... I went to go and pick her up. I went to help to pick her up. And she recognized her delusion. She recognized what she had seen and how she had felt, but it was over. And why she is so clear, I do take that down to her spiritual practice. That it's not disaster for her, that she was kind of just seeing that... Wow, the power of the mind that can tell totally different. War is starting, and so then the husband of her sister said, "Oh wow, you know, so you think a war is starting and we're in danger, and you leave and you don't take us with you? Come on, you know, I mean, what kind of Buddhist are you here?" So she knows also now that when something like this starts again, then maybe she's good if she goes to talk to somebody. Okay, so I'm sorry that if I hurt somebody's feeling about saying that we're all psychopaths. That was definitely not my intention. What I mean is, like, we're all delusional. And we can see it in that example. When somebody hurts me, it becomes very heavy. When I hurt somebody else, the same action, maybe even heavier, but it's, yeah. For other people, when they hurt us, we freeze them into that moment. You know, we do not want them to be happy anymore. We're not saying that outward like this, but you can check, as I said, if you hear somebody saying, wow, you know, the person is so successful and is so happy, and if you think, oh, so good, you know, then you have no grudge. But if there's something they don't deserve it, you still have not forgiven. This is how you can see. So now it's here. Yeah, hello.
Even people who didn't hurt us.
Huh?
Even people who didn't hurt me, sometimes it's difficult to hear, but they are very successful.
Yeah, even those, yeah. So then forget.
So this
is very, very high. It's very high, but it's possible. So this is why I started to tell the story about this young man who says, but I don't want to forget because of that, I really have touched on my true, real compassion, because I can see the suffering of my father. And because he's a Buddhist also, I know that he will have to go through the same thing, if not worse, in the future. So, you know, I mean, this is such an inspiring young man. And he's happy, you know. And I'm sure also you talk about Holocaust. There are examples from the Holocaust where people were able to let it be, to let go. You know, so concentrate on these and see, look at their lives after and the lives of these people who cannot let go. And do not get angry at somebody who cannot let go. Forgiving is a very, very, very difficult thing. Do not underestimate the task. Okay? Yeah.
What about forgiveness for ourselves?
Yes.
Try to feel yourself.
And then you think, I am a good person. And just watch what happens. I am a good person. You don't even have to give yourself reasons because I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm constantly forgiving. Well, just simple fact. At the basis, I am okay. Or you can go as far as, I'm trying. For the moment, that's good enough. For me, to say to myself, I am a good person. Okay. Okay? It's okay? You can open your eyes, or you can stay there still if you want to make it a bit deeper. So it's very rare, it happens, but it's very rare that people don't totally relax into this. You see, when you are relaxed, you become a good person. This is the thing. So our task is to know to how to relax ourselves, not how to succeed and how to be good and how to be able to forgive everybody and all the Nazis and all these. If you can't, you can't, you know. Be gentle with yourself and start to believe in that positive potential that we have. There are few people who then, when they cannot do that. So I asked them, what's happening? Why can't you? Why is that relaxation not coming with that thought? So somebody said, oh, because then I have to be good. And that's too much effort. Thank you very much. So I don't think so. You know, again, we put goodness with action, with success, with what we're doing. We're not identifying goodness with what we actually are. Human, you know. Humanitarian. Being able to reach out to others when we have the possibility to do so. Have an open heart. Be understanding, considerate. It's a very good description here also that it's like, I can't remember if it's the psychotic or the psychopath. I'm not making fun of the person. It's okay. It's good that we have these categories. I just don't, you know, know. So, not being able to put ourselves into the other person's shoes or place. That's lack of compassion. But then at the end you give the shoes back. They are not your shoes. But you know what it means. And you can make that, you can make that person understand that you hear what they're saying, and maybe you will, you can't say, I know how you feel, because you don't know how the person feels. But you can say, yes, I see, this is very difficult. This is very soothing, by the way. You know, instead of giving people always remedies what they can do about this, to teach them just to stay with it. And this is why we do silent awareness meditation in the morning. It can do wonders for you when you are in difficult situations. If you have been hurt, you know, always, if you look Buddhist forgiving, like they're mostly Western because the Tibetans, they don't need to forgive. They don't have teachings on these things. They know about karma. This is the thing, you know. And they get on with it. Okay, it's, you know, like, I remember Gajan Rinpoche when he came to Israel the first time, I don't know if you remember. He started teaching by saying, I've been imprisoned by the Chinese army for 17 years because it was my karma. Finished. He said that in a very relaxed way. And he go like, they're bad and whoa, whoa, whoa. And if he's not relaxed, I don't know who is relaxed, you know. And he's been in prison and tortured. So this is what we should take as examples, you know, if they can do it, let's try also. But it's difficult for us, so don't overdo it. So sometimes we even refuse to believe in that we are good people, because then they go, because I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Say, yeah, you're doing this. Do you want to do this? Do you want to be nasty to yourself and then to others? Do you do that out of free choice? Of course not, yeah? We have instincts, habits, confusion. It's confusion, you know? We're totally confused. But the mind mistakes it for, well, that part of the mind that we do not, the mental factor that we call confusion or stupidity, if you want, that one is so cunning that it makes it true, you know? If you have moments where you really think you're absolutely no good, ask somebody what they think of you. You know, if you ask somebody, you know, I have a feeling I'm a really horrible person. What do you think? They might say yes. Then you can continue to put yourself down. Then it's at least you have two people who believe it. But most of the time people say, yeah, you know, you're this and that, but you're also that, you know. We can also communicate a little bit to others when we see their qualities and, you know, and we can say, and we can just burst out like this spontaneously, wow, I'm so happy that you exist. It's okay, we can say these things to each other. And it's good, it's healing, it's soothing. So awareness of how your mind is and what your mind is doing, with the technique of standing behind and just watching, that in Buddhist forgiveness methods, whatever, it always comes together. You need to give yourself the space that you have been hurt. You need to feel that pain so that it can heal. And then again, you do not start with the biggest one. You start with, you know, somebody who doesn't want to go to the movie with you that evening, and you're upset about this. Something like this. Something that is feasible. Otherwise, you're like somebody who wants to drive, wants to learn how to drive, and you know, has so much money, and they say, I'm going to buy a Ferrari. This is how I will learn to drive with that. Not Ferrari, it's not Formula One car. Okay, you get into it, and 2 seconds later you're in the wall. So then you crash, and then of course you go like, you know, I don't succeed, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. Just please hear me when I say forgiving and self-forgiving, unfortunately, is very, very, very difficult because of our arrogance. We think we're perfect. And then we can't forgive ourselves when we notice that we're not, you know? That's it. It's basically it. And arrogance, we don't see it very often. You know, we don't know if you're not doing awareness meditation, not just study of mental factors, but awareness meditation, we don't see what is arrogance and what is healthy self-confidence. We don't know the difference. Arrogance is when you constantly have to compare yourself with others and please others that are less than I am. I am so good, I did this, that, wow, wow, wow. Then you become self-confident. Then that goes into arrogance. Self-confidence is like, yeah, I'm trying, that's good enough. I will succeed at one point if I continue, but if I fail now, I can pick up myself up and start again. Anybody watches tennis? Who? You? You know Stan Wawrinka?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what he's got tattooed on his underarm? You know, this poor Stan, the man, we had Roger Federer, always number one. The cool guy who is really cool, and you know, he loses against Djokovic. It could have been his 18th win, blah, blah, and this and that. But he kind of smiles 2 seconds later, and Stan sometimes loses his temper. And he was always number two, and he lost like many, many times. He's not as attractive as Roger Federer. He's not as cool as Roger Federer. He's a very good tennis player. So anyway, he's tattooed on his underarm. I find this so inspiring that I can hardly say it without getting tears in my eyes. Tried and failed. Doesn't matter. Try again. Fail again. Try again. Fail again. And learn to fail better. Huh? Samuel Beckett, yeah, exactly. Something like this. I don't know if it's word by word, but this learn to fail better instead of learn to succeed. Then you are safe. It's so inspiring, you know. And if you see how through hard work, he really, really, really never giving up. He failed, he went again to the tournament, he beat Djokovic. He became Paris Roland Garros champion this year in pyjama pants. Everybody says the pants he was wearing were pyjama pants.
Yeah.
So go in that direction. Failure is not failure. Seeing, noticing that we failed and being able to pick ourselves up again, that is success. You know, it's easy to be happy and when everything goes well and everybody loves you and you have a lot of talents and this and that. But very, very quickly you become arrogant about this, you know? Very, very quickly. And you put others down because they're not as good as you and, you know. If you have talents, great. Be happy. But not everybody has, you know? And don't expect from everybody to have all the talents that you would like them to have. Be happy for what they have, and what they don't have, well, they don't have. And you also learn to be okay the way you are. And that doesn't mean you're not making progress. It doesn't mean that at all. It means you start to relax. And when you're relaxed, everything is so much easier. Give yourself the space to fail. So what? The world is not going to stop. You're not going to be on the news if you fail. You know, maybe on the Facebook. This world has all become about success. And this is why we suffer so much, you know. We should give prizes to the people who really learn, who can fail happily. Then we would have a happy society. I was playing with two kids at one point, and two brothers. They hated each other. I always won because nobody went against me. None of them went against me. They only went against each other. And I, beep, 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 beep. I went home, you know, with the dice, you know. And they got angry, and we went, you know. So I said, well, okay, let's see. The one who loses, I will give him 2 francs. So they learn to lose. We should teach our children to learn to lose. Do you still want to be here? Do you want to go home? Because we will fail sooner or later. This is what life is all about, I'm afraid to say. We cannot expect to sail through life with just successes and everybody, all the doors open, and you'll get depressed if it's like this. You will cook up other problems, you know. It's the nature of the human mind to cook up problems, and they're all delusional. They're just situations that need certain reactions. How does that sound to you? You know, success is very dangerous because you can fall very quickly. I mean, today the competition is so high. At least I think in spiritual groups, maybe not so. But still, there seems to be something like, there's always this question, how many people were on the course? I find that the most stupid question ever. What does it matter? Is it very successful because there's many people on the course? You know? But I see in myself, it is difficult not to go in that direction and be happy when there's lots of people and be not so happy when there's not so many people. And, you know, I have to make a conscious effort not to buy into that and always say, doesn't matter. I buy something, I bought all the offerings. Somebody asked, how much did you pay for it? I said, I'm not going to tell you. Why do you want to know how much I paid for it? And then afterwards you tell me I overpaid? It's most probably I overpaid because people see I'm not from this country, they're in the market, they take advantage of it, and I pay more than the locals. It's okay. I don't mind. It's all right. It's offerings. The more I pay, the more merit I get. You know, you can start to think like this, so then you go, then you can pretty much sail through life easy, relaxed, yeah? And then you see the wonders of life. You see the beauty in many, many places that you didn't see before, you know? The more relaxed your mind is, the less you need and the more you enjoy everything. The big things, the really amazing things, you know, the I don't know, cakes or whatever. And also, but also the little things. A glass of water when you're thirsty. So much, we have so much, you know? And also gratitude comes with, you know, the more you can feel that, okay, I lost this and I lost that and lost this and lost, but I still have this and this and this and this, you know. We unfortunately, we have this black and white view. Like everything goes out of the window when we lose something. Like, let's say your partner leaves you. It's disaster because you think you cannot, you don't want to separate, but the partner wants to separate. And you think you cannot survive without this person. And you totally forget that for quite a number of years in your life, you lived without this person and you were totally okay. You forget this. It's all right, you know? Instead of keeping to harm each other and again and again and again and again until you stop communicating, you know, then Let go. I'm not saying, like, you know, I'm not encouraging you to divorce, okay? Please understand that. Work with your relationship. You will have a happy relationship if you work at it. If you ask couples who are still together after 50, 60 years, you ask, you know, was it easy? Most of them will say, no, we had to work at it, you know. There are some people who seem to have the karma that it goes without effort. Then you ask them, how do you live? And they say, or he says, oh, well, you know, most of the time I'm not home because my job is in America or la, 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 whatever. So I just come home for holidays. And so then, you know, okay, you know. It's difficult, a relationship where, you know, to really go along with the changes that the other person is going through is very, very difficult. And the more you ask from the other person, you should make me happy, the more you have a chance that it will break, you know. And of course, you know, my sister-in-law, and there are other people who are in this situation, they lose their partners when they're still very much in love. And this happened to my sister-in-law. My brother died very young. So she still suffers, because in her head it is like this relationship would have continued until we would have died, probably hand in hand together somewhere. And I don't have the heart, because she doesn't practice, so I don't have the heart to tell her, but you know, what would have happened if he would have fallen in love with another woman? How would you have felt? She cannot imagine that that could have happened. The same way as when you get married, you cannot imagine that you would fall in love with somebody else or your partner would fall in love with somebody else. Yet we see that it happens. But we all think it doesn't happen to me. Yeah, it does happen. And these are very, very, very deep injuries then sometimes that people inflict on each other, and they can't forgive and all that. And they close the door for their being able to continue, you know. And if, maybe, you know, and one can live alone. I'm the proof for it. Do you have other proofs here that one can be alone without my partner, and you're quite happy? Do we have some other people here? Okay, please let yourself be known. Okay, so for those who maybe are facing somewhere else there, who are facing a separation, it's possible. It's okay, you know. It's okay. You have much more time to do beneficial things. And, yeah. You have a lot of liberty. You can finally do what you want to do. You know, a friend of mine's mother, she had a really, really, really difficult husband. He fought with everybody. He was constantly criticizing. That whole house, the whole neighborhood, everybody was idiots and this. When he was driving, he was a very bad driver. But it was everybody else who was a bad driver. She was so patient with that man. She really loved him. She had this connection to him that she got upset sometimes. That's fine to get upset. But she did not hate him. She never stopped communicating with him. She never stopped looking after him. And her biggest fear was that he would die the way he lived, angry and upset. But he didn't. He died very peacefully. And she was very happy that he was able to die peacefully. I mean, she's also dead. She was such an inspiring woman, always in a good mood, very courageous, very strong, difficult life, like also, you know, money-wise and all this. So when he had just died, I went to see her. He said, well, you know, actually I'm quite happy that he died, you know. I know that you understand. I can tell you, I know that you understand. Because now, finally, after all these years, I can watch a TV program until it's finished. Because he had always the remote control, and he was zapping, 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 zapping. Yeah. So you see, it's these people that we can take as examples, that it's possible to do, and we can be inspired by them. It is possible to respect somebody who is a difficult person, you know, because also he did go out and work and brought home the money. She did not work. She was looking after the children. They only had one child. She desperately wanted more. Didn't happen, so it was that one child. And it didn't make her life finished, miserable. I want more children, but I only have one. It's okay. So she saw the good sides. He was very diligent in his work. He kept his job for like all these years. They didn't throw him out because he was very good at what he did. He was some engineering something. And so she said, but he feeds me. He brings home the money. So this is what we can do, you know, start to look at the positive sides. Now, the difference between, so what I wanted to talk about a little bit about this afternoon is like how to develop healthy states of mind that can counteract these negative states of mind. Because unfortunately, you know, it is not enough just to sit here and then when things go bad, you sit down and say, I'm a good person. That's not enough. That is just to make you relaxed. So that whatever you have to do, then you will do in a more relaxed way, okay? Because we do negative things, and we do harm others. So we also have to address that. But if you address this fact with a tense mind, it will not be helpful. It will just make you feel guilty. You will not want to admit. Then you do, you know, you feel bad to yourself. Maybe you go and binge on alcohol, food, TV, work, drugs, whatever, and that really does not help, but the instinct is there. It's like there's so much tension, you have to release it somehow, and then you go into these things, and then more self-hate, and more binging on whatever, and so it goes on and on and on and on and on. So then the moment is there for you to sit down, I'm a good person, and then see, what can I do now? You know, take steps. Do things which are not easy. As I told you, I was an alcoholic. It's not easy to get off these instincts to, you know, for... And for many years afterwards, still, I had... Whenever there was a problem, I didn't drink alcohol, but I was reaching out for a bottle. For many, many years afterwards, it's quite amazing. It was water or, you know, whatever. Lemonade. But it was this thing when I was, like, stuck somewhere, it was... something to drink. So we carry this with us for a long time, you know. So, love, self-love. Versus being totally concerned with yourself. So love has wisdom in it, you know. Love is a factor that wants somebody else or yourself to be happy and has the wisdom to see that it doesn't come just like that, that one has to do something. And love wants to do something also. Love is able to let go of what you wanted to do for the sake of the other person. So it's sometimes easier to do when we have, like, we do love with two people. So love would say, I want you to be happy no matter what. Attachment says, I want you to make me happy. Or I love you so much because you make me happy. And there, if somebody else comes along who makes you happier than me, you know, you wouldn't be happy if all of a sudden your husband kind of meets another woman and you can see that it's much better relationship than with you, and it's much easier for him, and he's much more relaxed and happier and all this. You wouldn't be very happy, would you, to be honest? Unless you're the one who wants to separate, then you would think, oh great, now is the chance to break it up without hurting him too much or whatever, you know? Do you see what I mean? So our relationships, most of them are mixed with attachment. We want something back. Attachment is business. We want something back. Love just wants to give, you know. And you can love anybody, even somebody who hates you. But don't go in front of that person and say, I love you so much. That would not be wise. Love is the mental factor that says, may you be happy. And may you have the causes for happiness. As simple as that. And with some people, we can do it very, very easily. People that we... You know, at one point somebody, we asked in the group, I was organizing a retreat, but I was not teaching it, but I was doing, you know, all the accommodation, food, blah blah, I was doing the whole thing for about 30 people and translating. So it was great, you know, it was really great. I had absolutely no space to have self-pity, that I was doing too much. because I really had to be on the go constantly. So it was really nice. And I was still in the retreat because I was translating, so you have to be concentrated. And concentration gives you so much energy. When you do something that you can do, I'm quite good at translating simultaneously. I don't have good memory, I can't do otherwise. But like this, and it really flows, and it gives you so much energy. It really opens the channels, you know. Oh, it's another thing, maybe. I know I go left, right, and all this. Instead of going on a binge, when you feel unhappy, do something that you're good at doing. And if it's of benefit to somebody else, even better. Make a bread, make a cake. Well, you probably never feel unhappy, do you? Make something for somebody else, you know, something that you're good at doing to bring yourself up again. Yeah. Do that once a week as a therapy. Spend time with things that you're good at doing. And take care of your body. If your body is having problems, they also, you know, take care of these issues. Do not, like, push them in front of you and, yeah, I should. Make the appointment with the doctor when you maybe feel something is wrong in your body and it has to be checked, you know. Do the things that you're frightened of. Because you carry them with you anyway, yeah. So coming back to healthy states of mind, like love is one of them. So we don't want to, you know, we don't like it so much when people are nice to us because they want something from us, isn't it? Huh? Yeah, we don't trust these people anymore. But we're doing exactly the same thing with others, really. Yeah, it's such a common thing to do. We get disappointed when, you know, if somebody promises that they will come to help me clean the house tomorrow if I go out this evening with them, and then I go out and we have a very good time, but then tomorrow he doesn't turn up, then I'm disappointed and hurt, you know. Why? We had a very nice evening. If he wouldn't have promised, why would I be disappointed? I would clean my house alone, like I always do. See, but because he made a promise, and it's such a common thing to believe it's such a bad thing if somebody breaks their promise. And we forget the nice evening we had the night before. No, if he wouldn't have promised it, I wouldn't have gone out with him. I wouldn't have had a nice evening. So you see, you start to think like this so that you can relax about the situation. Okay, so I clean the house alone.
What happens when most of the dialogue that goes around relationships is based on those ground bases that I give and I get?
Yeah. No. You know what Lama Zopa Rinpoche says? I'm telling you, it's not me who says that. It's Lama Zopa Rinpoche who says that, okay? He says, in a relationship, it's enough if one is flexible. It's enough if one is flexible. It's true, on top of it, you know? It's like, it's really true. You see, this whole thing about being generous and giving and loving and this and this, if you're not ready for it, do not do it. Don't do it. Because your ego will start to rebel, you will get angry, because you haven't seen your expectations. You know, we have trained ourselves to have expectations. The world functions like this. It's a business. It's a whole business out there. It's a loony bin who is doing business sans arrêt, how to say it, without stopping. You know, to constantly doing business. I give, I get, I give, I get, I give, I get. But one can also train to decide, I'll be the one who is flexible. Okay, then when you feel it gets too much, then you take a break. Yeah, and then again, you try and you try and you try and you try. You know, and it works. It really works. But it's, you know, there's always this fear that people take advantage of you. Where is this fear coming from? The fear comes from that we don't really want to give when nothing comes back. This is what we call taking advantage of. You know, I am here in Israel because I want to share whatever I've learned these 24 years, how to work with the mind. I'm happy if you take advantage of that and you come to the classes or you come and ask me questions and things like that. I don't feel taking advantage of if nobody comes. I know that some of you, I'm not looking at anybody now, I know that some of you maybe even think, I can go and talk to her, I don't need to pay her then, it saves me I don't know how many shekel for a psychoanalyst session. Because I don't ask for any money. People come and talk to me, I can listen to them for, you know, for quite a while. And it's free. So what, are you taking advantage of me? Am I stupid to do that? Should I put myself up as a psychologist and ask for a fee? Should I do that? I could also have this attitude, you know. I learned this for 24 years, and now people just come to get it. And they're not giving me any money for that. I could have this attitude. Do you think I would be happier if I would have this attitude? Huh? You know, we could have, if people start to take responsibility, we could have such a wonderful world. But again, it comes really down to confusion. It's like, we are so confused and stupid and do certain things, like money, for example. Money is such a stupid thing, you know? I mean, there's so much of it all around the world, and it's used in such stupid ways. Yeah? We could make it circulate. That's what it's for. You know, it should have a date on it, an expiry date on it, like your card for the gym. Because if your card for the gym expires, you still go maybe a few times before it expires. Yeah? You know, there's this, well, usually people do. Yeah, they say, oh, one more month, I better go. Yeah, you're not saying, throw it away. Take advantage of it. So this is how we should use our life. We don't know when it expires, so we should take advantage of it. Life is not made to be miserable. And, you know, in a little corner there and feel miserable about yourself. Life is about having joy and having fun. Spiritual practice is to make you a joyful person, not to be somebody like really serious who can't have any fun and, you know, nothing is allowed. Not like that. To make you free of all these expectations and all these things. But, yeah, it's hard work to be the only one that is flexible in a marriage or in a relationship. It's very hard work. But I just gave you that example of this woman who was a very, very happy woman, you know, because she had inner strength. And this is, it's not about outside conditions. We will be happy when all the outside conditions are perfect. You can wait a long time. It will never happen. But we can develop inner strength so that we see whatever is there is good, is great, is good enough, you know. There's a T-shirt I saw once in a train here in Israel. Good is not good enough for me. You set yourself up for unhappiness. You know? Contentment, gratitude, all these wonderful mental factors. How many of you have learned in school how to develop these things? Nobody. How to earn money, this is what we learn. You know, there's this story about this in Greece, like they have like financial problems, yeah? So the hotels are empty, so there's this big hotel empty, a German guy comes, or any guy, doesn't matter, French. And he says, I want the best room. And so the manager says, yeah, well, all of them are empty. Please, you can go and have a look. I'll give you all the, you know, the cards. But please, you have to give me 100 euro deposit because I'm giving you all these cards. And then if you find one, okay, if not, it's also okay, I'll give you back the 100 euros. So he has this 100 euro and he has debts at the baker. So he thinks, I go and pay these debts because I haven't paid the bread yet. So the baker has debts at the electrician who fixed his oven. You know the story I told, who fixed his oven. So he goes and pays the electrician. The electrician has debts at the prostitute because he hasn't paid her yet. So he goes and pays the prostitute with his 100 euro. The prostitute has debts with the hotel because he hasn't paid the room yet. So she goes and gives the 100 euro to the manager. The German guy comes downstairs and he says, look, sorry, I don't like this place. He said, okay, here's your 100 euro. think about this story. And about other systems maybe than the one that we have, you know. It's good. It's all fiction. Debts, bills, money, it's pieces of paper that the mind gives a certain value, you know. Can you imagine what you would happen if that would be a 200 shekel bill and I would start to burn it? You would go, you know. It could be a fake one. It's a piece of paper. No, it's not 200 shekel, but it's like it's a piece of paper. Okay, then. So the difference between love and attachment, can you see it? So when you get hurt, it's usually attachment. Now, the purest love that we have is in general, but again, as you said, as you pointed out, I know there's exceptions, there's in general towards our children. Seems to be something physical also, seems to be something that, it seems to be something natural, okay? But it's, yeah. But there are exceptions, as we said. And so, this kind of love that is, it's still for your children, but it's, the child is more important than you. And I'm sure that many people who have children, they know what I'm talking about. It's somebody also here from Israel who told me, you know, since I have a child, I know how my father felt about me. And it's only now that I can be grateful to my father, because before I never understood what he feels and why he's acting the way he's acting. Now that I have a child, I see what he felt. I understand what he felt. So that's very nice, and it's very opening to understand these things. So this kind of pure love is very strong. So if your child says, oh, I really hate you, you know, because you just didn't give the child what he wanted, it's not pleasant. Nita is nodding. Are they saying that a lot to you? Yeah, here and there. So then how does it affect you? She says it with a smile. She says it with a smile because she loves the children. It doesn't go in. It's not pleasant. You would rather have them come and, you, mommy, you're so nice, right? But sometimes it happens. But because there's love, it rolls down on you, they say, like drops on a duck's back, water drops, you know? There's still maybe some wetness staying there, but it doesn't go in. If it's your partner saying that, because there's attachment, it's very much mixed with attachment, you would not say with a smile on your face, oh, imagine what you told me today, said that he hates me, you know. There we would believe it immediately. We wouldn't see that it's only just that moment that he hates the netta that is there, just that moment. And that there is a moment of anger and hate, yes. Is there, but that these moments are not permanent. With children, we understand it, we can separate the child from that moment of hate, or even the child from the mental factor of hate. When there's, it's mixed with attachment, we become blind and we cannot separate it anymore. And then the person gets frozen into that situation, cannot move anymore, preserved. Yeah, we don't want that person to be happy. We don't respect that person anymore. Yeah, we have moments like this for ourselves also, that we have hate for ourselves. But then again, we allow ourselves to be happy. We go and give ourselves an ice cream, or we spend some money for ourselves. You will never spend money for that other person. Yeah. So with us, it doesn't sit so much, unless you really sick, you know, and you really need to go and find psychological help or even psychiatric help. So with us, we are able to separate ourselves from the action, and that's healthy, to really see clearly the action is not beneficial, but I'm still an okay person because I can change my actions if I put the right effort into it. Of course, if it's just blah blah blah, then we all know what a hypocrite is, and then of course you don't feel good about yourself. But if you really sincerely, honestly try, and you apply methods, and maybe you go to groups, and You know, you can't do this alone. It's impossible. You cannot change your mind alone. It's too difficult. You need to have the tools and the right tools, and there's hundreds of tools. I almost said millions, and then I thought, nah, not millions. There's hundreds of tools. So you need to know which tool to apply at the right moment. You know, there's thousands of medicines, and each of them is a good medicine. But if you take medicine for diarrhea when you are constipated, well, the medicine is not going to do the job. It just gets worse. So if you're full of yourself and you really feel bad about yourself, and then you think about karma and negative emotions and it's my fault and all this, this wonderful medicine of there's a cause, that's the result, is not going to work. It will make you feel even more miserable. Then you have to think about your good sides that you have. If you're totally arrogant and you're on top of the world and you think you're better than anybody else and you will always succeed and everybody has to look up to you, then think about all the things you goofed up and you cannot do. You know? This is what I mean. But the mind in general, the habitual mind, does it exactly the wrong way around. When we are depressed, we think about all the things we cannot do and are not accessible to us and we'll know, you know, we're not successful, all the problems that we will have in the future. You can die any moment. Then all these problems are finished. You don't have to pay bills anymore. You don't have to amend anymore with other people that you have hurt. It's too late, cannot do anything. You know, and we never take that into consideration. But I could die before this difficult situation comes. We forget. It's the only thing that is really that will really happen in our life is death. And most of the time we forget to calculate that into our plans. And you think we're not confused? Huh? Are we confused or are we not confused? It's good to admit it, because then you want to do something about this, you know? Then we want to clear it up. So when you have this deep hurt, you know, from somebody, it's like, now I'm not talking about parents hurting their children. That's another category altogether, because that's really painful, because you know, they should protect you and they should not harm you. But this whole thing, the more love there is, the less people can really hurt you. The more hurt there is, seems to be, from partners, friends, I'm talking about partners, friends, like these kind of people that we surround ourselves, then there's usually a lot of expectations and attachment, you know. If it comes to separation, we can, you know, like my sister had a very, very good marriage. Because she misses her husband so much now, she cannot appreciate these maybe 20-something years that they did have together. They married very young. Yeah, exactly, 20 years. 20 years ago he died, and they were married about 20 years. So, you know, you cannot appreciate anymore. And just sometimes somebody says a wrong word, and you totally forget all the good things that have happened before. Isn't it? And who suffers? Who? Me, especially. Of course it's nice if everybody is as decent as I am. But sometimes it's good that not everybody is the way I am, also, because I also do things that are not very nice. Or I did a lot of things that were not very nice, you know? But it would be nice if everybody would behave the way we want them to behave, but sometimes they don't. So how to develop love is by seeing how pleasant it feels in your heart to be able to look at somebody and say, I really wish you all the best from the bottom of my heart without any strings attached. And if he's happy, I'm happy. I maybe, you know, tells me about his project, he tells me that it's going well, I'm happy. I'm not involved at all. I have nothing from this project, but I'm happy. That's love. So, Nif, basically, I love you. Like I love everybody else here at the moment. There's nobody I have dislike for, so you're very lucky. I can really claim that, honestly, openly. So, it's and we can develop that you can learn these things by feeling that I'm the one who benefits. But if the situation is already stuck, don't even try to change hate into love. I know that the direct antidote to hate is love, but don't even try. Your hate, your ego will not want to do that, you know. First develop it with people where it comes easy, you know. And to connect, again, the awareness, to connect to this feeling of how I feel when I tell Niv, I wish you all the best from the bottom of my heart. How does it make me feel to be aware of that? So then the intelligence starts to understand, if I want to make business here, I make business that way. I will go in that direction because that's a secure business here. You know, business with others is not secure. But business with developing love, strengthen that muscle by repeating it, you know, by looking at somebody. You don't have to say it because otherwise people think you're a bit gaga or a bit naive or I don't know, you know. But to look at somebody and just think, you know, may you be happy, may you be well for the rest of your life. Just like this, just to integrate that in your daily life. Yeah? So this is how you develop that healthy state of mind. Compassion needs a lot of courage, especially these days. It's a difficult mental factor to develop. It's also a very strong one. Because we only have compassion for the victims. And when the victim turns into aggressor or something like that, you know, because already, you know, the thing about this football player thing, this Syrian man who got who was brought to fall by this woman, and already now there's news he was in the Nusra, El Nusra Front or whatever. So it's like El Nusra is like a terrorist organization, whatever. It's like, I don't know, you know. So we need to have compassion for both sides, for the ones who aggress and for the victims. By really seeing these people who are doing these horrible things, maybe they appear happy, but this is not my idea of happiness. Having to go around and hurt others, cheat others, kill others, whatever people do, to attain some happiness, I don't think that's the right way to do. And again, I'm not talking about these people who are on the drugs and in their euphoria they go and cut heads. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about people you meet in the street who cheat you, who don't treat you nicely, who have no respect for you, who disparage you, whatever. Do you think that these people are happy? Do they come across as happy people? What? Yes or no?
No?
No. So why be angry at them? Why be jealous? You know, they might have some short moments of happiness when they succeed in their devious ways. So why get upset? Because they're not happy. And generate compassion. And especially if you're a Buddhist, you know, because you know that the moment you are an aggressor, you're the future victim. The victim now has been the past aggressor. And as long as we have beings who cheat, kill, murder, rape, whatever, we will have victims, because it's them that then at one point will be victims. We will have earthquakes, we will have floods, we could definitely anyway not control nature. These things will happen, you know, these so-called natural disasters, they're only disasters because there's human beings living there. If there would be no human beings living there, well, there is an earthquake or there is a landslide. So what? You know, nature just, you know, built, it recovers very quickly, nature. Not the houses. The houses, they don't grow, that have collapsed. but nature recovers. And that's difficult because we, compassion and forgiving, we can put these two together. It doesn't mean you go like, oh, well, karma, okay. So she's the victim or he's the victim, but it's in their karma. So therefore they deserve it. So it's quite okay. That's no compassion. Compassion doesn't make you also, if you need to put borders, put borders. Whether people then will respect them or not, I don't know, but have the courage to put borders, to say until here and not more. That's it. It's fine. You have a right to do that, because we have conventions here, We agree on certain things. But if it happens, I'm talking about whether for situation when it does happen and you cannot prevent it. You can try to set border, but whether people will respect that or not, we don't know. Would be nice if everybody would say, oh yeah, sorry, excuse me, that's it, yeah. And don't set the borders too narrow also, because then you become very lonely in your protected area there. So it's difficult things, it's difficult things. But compassion is a mental factor that I call Niv, and he says, it's really not going well. Sorry, I use you, it's okay, yeah? In case you start to have certain thoughts, you can have these thoughts, you're allowed to have them, but they're totally useless. There's nothing going on between, at least not between me and him, maybe between him and me, I don't know, but definitely not. I'm just using him as an example. And he says, it's really not going well. It's the heart that opens and asks, what is it? Can I do something? That is compassion. The mind who wants somebody to be free from suffering, And especially if you look at the so-called bad people who go around cheating, hurting, only being concerned about themselves, especially those need the compassion so that maybe they too can get connected to their own inner good qualities that they have, They're constantly on the defense because somehow they probably know what they're doing, maybe very, very, very deep down. But I'm sure they, at one point, this is why they're not happy. This is why they need more and more and more and more. It's like the binge almost, So try to understand where it comes from. Not because they're bad by nature, because they're even more confused than I am. And because they're unhappy also. Yeah. Does that make a little bit of sense? You're not becoming a doormat with compassion, okay? If you can stop somebody else from harming you or others, by all means do, because it's not good for them either to harm you. If you can protect yourself, there's nothing wrong with protecting yourself. Please do. That's fine.
Now, what about if they're using your compassion?
Like what? I don't know, I would have to see the person, talk to the person, get to know the person. Am I just really sucking me dry, but they never make any step from their side? I don't know. That's very, very individual. It's very individual. But I think what one has to look at the feeling first is, why do I have a feeling that they are using me? Because if you want to be a beneficial person, somebody has to use you. Otherwise, to whom are you going to give your skills? To whom are you going to be beneficial if nobody's using you? Huh? It's like being a very good doctor or dentist, you have no patients.
Yeah, but if you are a doctor, then you are treating someone and that person is changing because of your treatment.
Maybe.
You get paid for it.
The doctor would not send you away if or a physiotherapist, if you don't do the movements that they show you, they tell you, don't come back anymore, you're useless, you're using me, you're using my time, you know. I mean, there are patients that are totally using also nurses, and it's okay for these nurses to say, look, sorry, I can really not help you at the moment, and there's other people I can help, so I'm going to see these other people now. It just happened. It was just a case like that not long ago. And I thought that nurse was perfectly right to say these things. But the patient that was told that was a very needy, nutnicky person. And she called me, oh, they hate me. So I explained the situation. It's true, you know, the way you are at the moment, the nurse cannot help you, but maybe she can help somebody else. So it's okay to tell them, I don't know how to help you. Do you have any idea how I could help you? If you show your readiness to, your willingness to be of service and to be helped, then that's fine. But we have very limited skills also, you know. But sometimes, you know, many people come, really, they come to talk to me. I don't usually say many things because I have very limited skills. You know, people come with huge problems and I don't know both sides and all this. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a judge, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a Buddhist nun. You know, and so people come talk to me. It's fine because I can feel sometimes if they are being listened to without me even giving them any tools to work with it, that already is helpful because very often it decreases the problem when somebody just listens to you with an open heart, with compassion. Very, very, very often. Yeah. I wish I could help these people who come talk to me, but I don't know, I don't have any solutions either, you know. So compassion is very strong, but very often, yeah. You see, we think we are compassionate and we help and then we're successful. And the person is helped. That's not compassion, that's again expectation. That at one point they should grow up and do something and this and that. But then again, you know, it's like we're playing so many subtle games. Because then again, you know, how would you feel about somebody that is a drug addict or an alcoholic? You take the person home with you, you look after the person, you nurse the person through the process of letting go of the alcohol or the drug, and then the person gets, you know, and you like the person very much. And all of one day the person comes and says, wow, thank you very much, you helped me so much, I don't need you anymore, bye. How would you feel? You invested a lot of time and money in that person. And they say, I don't need you anymore. Thank you so much. How would you feel?
Good.
Huh?
Probably good. The problem would be if he returns to drug or steals money.
Yeah, you still want success. You want him, you know, look what I did to him, thanks to me. Yeah, a little part of it is still there, I think. Just a little bit. Maybe a half an atom. Huh? Maybe tiny, tiny, tiny is still there, you know? Because it's not your failure if he goes back to drug and alcohol. And it's not a failure. It's not a failure. It's just, you know, addiction, we should look at it like a garden. Yeah? You start to grow a garden, and sometimes you got a bit fed up with your garden, and the things get a bit dry and all this. But it's still there. You can still start to water again, and to water again, and to water again. Don't give up the whole thing, you know? But we wouldn't feel so good. I will never call you again. I will, you know, I don't need you anymore. We wouldn't feel that great, I think. I will forget about you. You can forget about me. I will forget about you. Or, you know, imagine you walk down the street. You're really happy to see the person that is really well. He sees you and says, oh, hi. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have time. Bye. You know, we wouldn't feel so good to see him or her so independent. So by helping also, we do attach a few strings there. At least they have to be grateful to me for the rest of their lives. At least they have to remember that it was me helping them to get out of the whole thing. Although it was their effort, of course, but it was thanks to me. You know, and so they're not allowed to fall back into the drugs. You see, this is very difficult. If you want to help somebody who is an addict, especially if that person is very close to you, when they fall back, they feel very, 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 very guilty. Not because of them, but because of you. And then they are ashamed, and then they're really blocked, and then they need more alcohol and more drugs. So when you help, try to cut all the strings before. I want to make this person totally independent of me, that even that I need help, they will not give it, it's fine. They don't owe me anything. Because why? Because by being beneficial, they give me enough. Like as we said at the beginning, is there anything that is more helpful and more beneficial than having the skills to help somebody, you know? Yeah, and I it's not I talk to someone, I listen to somebody, and then maybe 2 years later they tell me, no, that really helped me so much. You know, it's great. It's fantastic. But if it didn't help, well, then also it didn't help. It doesn't mean that you have to become as cold as a fish and not be happy when it works. So, I have 2 minutes to talk about equanimity. Because that is what we're trying to do, not to totally fly off the handle when we're very successful or when we're not successful, when we receive praise or when we receive criticism, when we to have difficult life or easy life. We try to see this in a very, very, how to say, even way. Because why? By seeing the nature of things, everything is impermanent. Everything finishes. And we totally forget about that fact. You know, how many times have you already been in situations when you thought, I cannot go on? Have you ever been in a situation like this? Yeah. And now what? Did it go on? Yeah. And there's even a smile on your face. You know, do not forget, and this comes very much with awareness meditation. You train to feed your brain, your memory, the thing. Everything passes. Everything is impermanent. Me, others, my enemy, you know. And then when you get, you know, have a fight with something, an argument with somebody, it becomes very important. We need to tell everybody, because everybody has to agree with me that this is a negative person. And then you kind of, you think, what will happen to that argument, or what will happen to that person and me 100 years from now? And then you, nothing, you know. It doesn't even need 100 years. Yeah. So with non-equanimity that we have, we tend to put people into 3 categories. The friends. So do you want to describe me? What is friend? You want to give me a definition of friend? That what we call friends? Someone we trust, okay? That's dangerous. Already? Huh?
In school we learned this item. A friend in need is a friend indeed.
A friend is?
In need.
In need?
Is a friend
indeed, yeah. These people who take time to help us when, or to listen, at least listen to our problems again and 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 again. That is, you know, my sister-in-law, I listen to her again and again and again and again and again. And I feel it's doing her good that I'm letting her be sad. Now she's out of it. She did not have the strength to come out of it by herself. She felt it was being loyal to her dead husband to feel sad, but not here. And I can't tell her these things, she would feel hurt. You know, she doesn't understand these things. Now she's moved to an old people's home, so I thought, like, poof, now it's going completely finished. Totally the difference. She starts to live. Why? She's the youngest, she's 66. She's already, voluntarily, she went into an old people's home. She has a small studio. She can be of help to others. People love her because she is helping, assisting. She can open up her heart again. She feels useful. She's totally changed. So if you feel depressed and lonely, book yourself into an old people's home. Then you're already there. You don't get bitter about your family when they put you there because you're dement or whatever. You are already familiar with the place. You know all the people, you know all the nurses, you know which are the nice ones, which are not the nice ones, which you have to avoid, which you can. Perfect solution. If you're afraid of being lonely, book yourself into an old people's home and volunteer. Use your time to help others. How about that? Yeah. Okay, so we have the friends. Usually a friend is somebody who is good to me, who comes when I need him, you know, when I call. Then when the friend says no, then the friend is not a friend anymore. But in, so that's what we call friend. Somebody who agrees with me, somebody who has the same likings, somebody who doesn't push my buttons. And yeah, sometimes arguments okay, but not so bad. And somebody who likes the same people that I like. Definitely not somebody who likes my enemies. So this is what we call a friend. So it's totally based on what I think the person should do, isn't it? Let's be honest. Yeah? Yeah. An enemy is somebody that is not good for me, that harms me, that is pushing my buttons, that is not nice to me, like this. And we have the same people jumping, you know, categories sometimes. And then we have the strangers. Millions of strangers. Billions of strangers we don't care about. You know, although we know they want the same thing as I want, happiness and not suffering. But yeah, they are happy, fine. They're not happy, none of my business. And we pass them every day in the street, hundreds of them, absolutely not concerned. Lumps of flesh moving beside me. Yeah? Just, how do you say, statists? I don't know. You know these actors who have very little roles? How you call them in English? Huh? Statists or statists? It's a vim. So everybody is just an it's a vim in my play. Nitz a vim. Okay. Everybody nitz a vim in my play. Sometimes they have, the role is a little bit bigger and they become a friend or they become an enemy, you know. And especially if they have become enemy in our daily life, they will never go back again to the role of nitz a vim. The friend, maybe sometimes we lose interest in them. They go back to nitz a vim. The enemies, never. They're always enemies. What is this saying, you know? We never forget where we buried the axe. You know, the Red Indians, they have this axe. They bury it when it's peace, but then when the war starts, they go and get it. We never forget where that one is buried. We know where it's buried, and it comes out very, very quickly. So we'll do a meditation on that after the break, on how to create a little bit more equanimity and how unreasonable this is. So in spiritual terms, Buddhist spiritual terms, a friend is somebody that I feel friendly towards, meaning may you be happy, may you be well. That can be a good person, a bad person, whatever. But it doesn't mean I let the bad, I usually don't use these words, that I let a harming, violent person do whatever they want to do. I'm not agreeing with them. If I can stop them, I stop them. If I cannot stop them, I call the police. That doesn't mean that I have no concern for their happiness. Yeah, so don't go too far there with your loving kindness. And an enemy, so that means I can have friendly feelings towards everybody. And friendly feelings, I'm not meaning you have to get involved in everybody's life and know all the stories and all that. But the moment you meet them, you want them to be happy and to be free from suffering. And if you see they're happy, you're happy. If you see that they're not happy, you try to do something, you know. Sometimes just listening to them is enough. Stopping, taking time for them. An enemy is somebody that I have unfriendly feelings towards. So I can work with that. Not somebody who harms me. So it's again, it's in my hands. Who is friend and who is enemy. And then, yeah, all the expectations. That's the most difficult thing to let go of, because it's so ingrained, you know. It's not fair. Oh, are we always so fair? If we would have to repay all the kindness that we have received, poh, you know, we're also not fair. We're not repaying the kindness of these people who work to make our clothes and to make our vegetables. We're consuming it, isn't it? If we would have to, you know, if we want to have fairness, then we would have to kick ourselves in the bum and, you know, really get our act together and start to be fair, you know. But it's somehow, it's a learned thing. We want profit, profit, profit. If something is in for me, then it's good, you know. So we start to switch. What can I give to others? Well, how can I contribute to the happiness of other people? This is what we start to do. At first, it's just theory. It's just thoughts. No need to, you know, don't do actions too quickly, because then you burn out and you get disappointed and all this, you know. And check your motivation before you're helping somebody, you know. Will I get upset if that Tenzin is not coming back? Huh? I was a little bit. I really was. I saw it in the morning meditation. I was not upset of him not coming back. I was upset at my stupidness to giving him the money, you know. But then I thought, I thought these thoughts I told you this morning. If he would have been honest, I probably would not have given him the money. And I was very happy when I gave him the money, because I have it, so I can give it. So then the upsetness is totally gone. It's totally gone. I cannot read people's thoughts. I don't know if they're honest or not honest. I don't know if they're telling me stories, if it's true or not true. I have no idea. But in general, I believe them. And then if it turns out it's not true, so what? I didn't tell the story. They did. I didn't lie. They did. You know. Trust is not a stupid thing. It's a very, very pleasant mental factor. And if you trust somebody, also sometimes it does something to the other person. They want to fulfill that trust. And please don't say, no, nobody is like this. I know that some people are not like this. I know some people are out to cheat and all this. But not everybody. Not everybody. Okay? Okay, so Tommy, you have your announcements. And...